It's episode nine, and it's another of my Sixth Sense amigos. He's another one of the Cassidy X-Men. He's a fantastic artist. He can play the shit out of a guitar. He's was in Metal Hansen, as you heard in last week's episode. He can turn water into wine, by God. And he might be the most naturally funny person I've ever met. He is Mr. Chris Kax
That's
There you go.
what the fuck type of intro is that? I want the Shane McMahon intro. Come on, let's go.
Do you know
Best
what?
In the world.
Fuck you. I spent 10 minutes writing that thing.
Give me my Shane McMahon intro.
You can suck my dick. What a start to your fucking podcast. Yeah, I can tell I had the plate fucking Cassidy last week. Jesus Christ. So, the old son, how's it going?
All right, but I'm sitting here drinking a nice cup of tea out of a Harry Potter mug. So, things aren't all that bad, you know. People are giving out about coronavirus. Cup of tea. Sorts it all out.
Is it still about kicks? I thought that was gone, man. I thought that doesn't happen anymore. You wouldn't think it, like.
According to the crazy bastards walking around outside, I don't think there's a drop of it left out there, man.
No, I think it must be all gone. I think we can all start hugging each other and all again.
No, we're just in a week or two and fist bumps will be back, but until then.
Telling you. Fist bumps and hand jobs. But anyway.
You think because of the lack of human contact and whatnot, that hookers can overcharge for a hand job now?
Well, put it like this, EasyJet have put their prices up for their fucking planes their journey, so absolutely, I think they should, because they've lost a lot of trade.
I'm telling them on hand jobs are like hen's teeth, babe. I'm telling you, they can fuck pretty good for a hand job now. No more of these favourite hand jobs. Oh, no, no.
Fuck me, you had to remortgage the house to get a fucking blue job.
Baby steps, folks, when you get back to it. Baby steps.
You're going to have to save some money, folks, because I tell you what.
I don't want fucking hookers to be back in style.
There'll probably be a cheap version where you can look at her lips while jerking off. You know, that's the cheap special. Just keep moving your lips. Oh, I like, glisten them up. Glisten them up.
Real nice, like. Here's my fucking RTQ. The social distancing applied, and just get to it.
Just people go, well, what's this key for? It's all round the corner from those bins right near where Jones lives.
Around the Albert Clock and wherever they're really all few places that Bill Taylor was mentioning in our podcast.
That's
Ollie. What the fuck? I don't know. Yeah. It's a good time to be alive, man.
It absolutely is. I mean, fucking hell, dude. I mean, I'll be honest with you. It's a different start to the podcast, boy, and I'm loving it. It's full of bollocks and what else would it be?
And I say, wasn't a welcome return to the fucking Premiership for your boys last night, man?
Oh, you fucking bastard! You had to start that shit. It was awful, mate. I mean, did you watch it any? Did you watch it or?
Just seeing results, or like, just seeing the results popping up on the phone, man, as they came up, and apparently David Luiz had a shit show.
He was in full sideshow Bob mode last night. That boy, he came on the pitch. He was laughing, but he came on the pitch, and then within 5 minutes, he'd fucking ballsed up and then scored. So and then he gets sent off. But it was really weird watching it. We see the whole fucking no crowd. And then Sky, you could switch it on to one channel and they've got like FIFA. You know, from FIFA 20 or FIFA 20, wherever the fuck the kids call that game. They've got the sounds of the crowd playing, but it's, I swear to God. So at the start, I thought, oh, they'll try this crowd thing. And at first it was like, all right. And then they were like, but it was delayed. So like the ball would be hitting the side net. And then there'd be like a delayed roar as if the crowd think it's gone in. So they were trying to be really clever. So I ended up just putting it on because I thought, I wonder if you can hear the player swear and that'll put it onto the other channel. And there you go. There was a bit of effing and jeffing and stuff. And I didn't really hear it that much, to be fair. I'm joking, like, but it's not the same, man. It's a bit like the wrestling. You need the crowd. Like, you know what I mean?
People right and saying, like, me and you's like lifelong football fans, like proper football fans, not these flabbernites. But I don't know how you're feeling, man, but I don't want to bore your audience with football shots, so we'll just get off it real quick. But
don't you dare keep you talking. Fuck me. I'm only joking. Go ahead.
Well, like, the Premiership coming back, have you lost a lot of interest?
I kind of have. I don't really give a shit. Mm-hmm. And that could be just the apathy of being an Arsenal supporter, I'll be honest with you, you know. But, you know, I won't give a shit probably until it starts to get back to normal.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Like, it could be, I could read a headline tomorrow that United have fucking signed Neymar and Mbappe and fucking this, that, and the other, and I wouldn't really care right now. It's like, yeah, all right, whatever. You know?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I did do a, God, my son. There was at the start of the game where Eddie and Keddie was running through, and I thought, oh, fuck, we might score here. Jesus Christ, maybe we've caught City that first game back. And then after 15 minutes, I realized that no, even with City being less fit than us, they were still better than us. And I thought, this is kind of depressing. I think mine's more down to how shite Arsenal are than anything else, you know. So,
yeah. I get we're not too fucking far ahead of this month. United did not lose or two away from fucking being down there, so yeah. It's not a nice time, but anyway, that's why the whole football coming back, and should this season been scrapped and all, that's, who knows, I don't know.
I think it doesn't help, man, that Liverpool are going to win the league. I think there was a little bit in me that, wouldn't it be funny? Or else if they've been given the league title with, eight games to spit or whatever, nine games, whatever it is to go, you kind of go, yeah, but you'll always have an asterisk by your name.
Exactly.
And I was kind of hoping for that, but now they've brought it back, I can't. We're going to have to put up with that shit. I mean, my brother was already fucking commenting on Facebook, oh, the last time Arsenal won away at the top six and all this list. So I had my last, the last time I can ever say it, the Liverpool fans saying, well, the last time you fucks won the league, Maggie Thatcher was in power, so suck my balls. So... But hey, do you know what? Enjoy it. They may as well have enjoyed it. We were fucking unbearable when we won it, and like United were unbearable when they won it. It's if your team wins, it's unbearable for everyone else. So you may fucking enjoy it, because when it goes bad, everybody will kick you on the way fucking down, because they have the bruises to prove it. I'm not a braggy bastard when it comes to football. I just, I'll give it back. Don't get me wrong, give it fucking back. But I wouldn't be one of those, we're the champions. It's like, all right, fuck's sake, what age
you? Yeah, that's it. Me does that carry on. So we're like, I could sit there and say, like a lot of my mates are Liverpool supporters, and I could say to them, congratulations, guys. Well,
yeah.
If the shoes in the off foot, I would never get that off them boys, but like United, they'd be like, you fucking manky scum cunts. There's me dropping this type of language. Am I allowed to curse in this podcast?
Yes.
I will. Apologies.
I know, mate, you are away. To be honest with you, you're about 5,000 curse words away from Chris Heath. So, like.
Listen to both parts of Chris's mom was very interesting. It was a good interview. So, yeah, a lot of stuff I didn't know about y'all's. It was nice to hear.
That episode, there's a whole lot more. That was a very small, that was a drop in the ocean with all the shit that went on, but there you go. But you were saying about the football and the fans there, though, just getting back to that, it made me remember, I remember back in 95, now, by the way, this is Man United supporters slobbering to me. But people do actually think, like, because you support a football team, it's another dumbass thing I don't fucking like. Is people actually think you own the fucking football club or you're part of it? I remember when Jimmer Merson came out as, oh, I'm on the fucking coke and I've been drinking and I've got all this. People were coming up to me as if, and I was like, he's not my fucking brother. What do you want me to do?
I honestly got the same after the whole Giggs was banging his bra's wife and all, like, oh, did you hear about Giggsy Kexy? I'm like, I don't know him. Everybody's wife, I don't give a shit.
I was like, and? What do you want me to do? Do you want me to wear a big shame thing and walk around like fucking Game of Thrones? I didn't know, because obviously Game of Thrones, I didn't know about that in 1994. But, you know...
I think there's big thing that always casts at me when it gets a football shot going, that always casts at me. Oh, but you're in debt to the two A's. You're in debt to the two A's. And what? So,
fuck. He isn't.
Who cares? I'm in debt to the two A's.
Exactly. Now I feel more part of it now. Do you know what I mean? But it is, people do. Do people used to say stupid shit like it? I mean, you're like... I remember once a Liverpool fan, Arsenal got beat by Liverpool, and a fucking Liverpool fan posted a fucking, like, made up. He actually sat with fucking glitter and glue. I swear to fuck.
Bit of proper effort.
Like, I posted a free knife. Him lying over there. What the fuck? It's like, are you seriously? That was commitment. I was very impressed. Like, I was impressed. And the glitter was a nice touch. The glitter was a nice touch.
Nice touch, man. I had to go to an arts and crafts store, purchase said glitter, and then make the effort.
He did, and he had to go and buy a paper from the paper shop, cut out the fucking gold and all that there. I was mainly impressed. And, you know, and I was saying that to him as I was kicking him in the ribs when he was on the ground crying.
You're a loser. No good. Listen.
Push free, mate.
You're putting the fucking bastard guard. That's fantastic, man.
Oh, so there, that's probably my most the weirdest fucking slabbering I ever got was someone doing that. Now, don't get me wrong, the same guy did ask me about Brazil in the European Championships that year. Oh, but you know, but we'll not get into that story for another day. I just, folks, a little insight to how some people really take football a little too fucking seriously. Don't get me wrong. I scream and fucking get on like a dick, but, you know, there's a point where I go, all right, it's football, it's, you know.
Yeah. Now, don't get me started about the snookers, David. Well, it's just people have to leave the room and I have to lose my pants. And that's just the way it happens.
That's unfortunately true.
And by God, I don't care where it happens. It could be in somebody's front room. I wouldn't give a fuck.
It was my front room, cock. You can't. It was mine. It was mine. And I actually got it filmed, so it's on the Sixth Sense page. You want to do it? What have we done for a plug, man? I love that. That's great. Sixth Sense on Facebook. You can see that very sketch. See what we do there? Fucking
creatively
great.
Creatively titled Snooker Wank. There you go.
Starring us two.
A true story.
That is a true story. I begged Bill to write that sketch when he told me that story. I was like, that's a sketch. That has to be done.
Who better to jerk off the snooker than me? There you go, man.
Well, it made a change from me. You know what I mean? So I was like, come on, someone else.
Hey, well, this sketch calls for a wanker. Texas Davies want to do this one?
Yeah. Yeah, and then we kind of shook. Oh, no, hold on. People can't see what we did there. We did rock, paper, scissors, but when we started doing the shaking action, it went on too long. And then I hurt my wrist, so it happened to Cax. That's what I had to be, man. That's what I had to be.
Hey, super subbed for your injured wrist.
Oh, dear fucking God. Well, listen, man, we talked about that young whippersnapper of a brother of yours, and he told me that you were in a band together, and it sounded like Metal Hansen to me.
I was driving that day for work, and I have to say, I did bust out laughing loud in the van, and was swiftly followed by fuckers.
He said it, and the minute I had to jump in, I was like, wait a minute.
Well, I had no retort. I was like, oh, he's right.
Oh, fuck. But anyway, man, I mean, obviously you've been around a bit in the old band scene and all that there.
Sure.
I fucking totally lost where I was going to go there. But yeah, you've been in, like, I only know the band. You were in Senescence, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. Was that your first band or...?
basically the long and short of it, man, without getting too fucking biography style, he basically got into metal when I was in high school, as you do back then, like, picked up my first bass guitar and tried to find other like-minded folks around me to put a band together, but everybody just wanted to be in the metal, and nobody, like, there was all my mates that were in the metal liked owning a guitar. Didn't mean they could fuck them. So the band was basically going down to a fucking St. Mary's Hall, which is no longer there. It's dilapidated and poured down, and bringing your chicks down to say, look how cool we are, we're in a band, but nobody knew how to play a lick. So that's as far as it kind of got, man. So I got disillusioned by it. You get into, you go from high school and university, and school work takes over, and then that was a relationship for like 7 years, and then completely lost my way of metal, and got back into it, as Jones had mentioned in the podcast, as getting back into my metal, and had it hardcore, like. So then naturally with that, the urge to play comes back, because I grew up in a musical house when my dad was a drummer, and then my brother's a drummer.
Yeah.
And Davey. And both very talented drummers themselves, and two gentlemen. And so I always wanted to play, but I was drawn to the bass. Always wanted to play bass. My dad always said, you have very long fingers, you make a great bass player.
And, there you go.
And the Metallica and stuff, and Jason Newsted and Cliff Burton and these guys. So, like, if you can't be influenced by them guys, Jesus Christ. So anyway, I'm rambling, but...
No, that's right. I mean, that gets me to the point of what you call use the casty X-Men, because he's like a fucking household of Phil. And I mean that as a cunt. I'm being a smart cunt, but I'm, you know... It was like, I said it last week to Jones, it was like fucking everyone in your household. It was like, you're good at fucking art, you're good at fucking music, you're not bad at comedy, you're all right. You know, and all those things, and it's like, fucking hell, man. I mean, that's fucking awesome to get a house, you know, full of people who were fucking, you've got all these different fucking things, and the art, you know, that's class, man. I don't know. What the fuck happened to me? We used to, like, I said to Jones, we used to, like, chain to a fucking room. I was like, right, today you're going to learn how to paint, and that's it. And
he wasn't that. Like, we were just more or less left our own devices, man, as kids, and that's what happened. But, like, if you're growing up in a house like that, it's not, you don't notice it. Everybody can. It just happens around you, and it's just natural that, like, my dad never had a fucking 9-to-5. He was a drummer and playing show bands and different things. And it was just that was normal in the house. And then, like, we had went out to see him play as kids, like, and like almost like a bring your kid to work day. So your dad bring you those gigs. And again, that's like class. You were sitting listening. Yeah, it was kind of cool. Like, it got you like a feel for the music, and definitely for a wide range of music, like country and pop and glam rock and all that. My dad used to play and stuff like that. So it definitely, it's got to be where it's more. Like, I've never done therapy or anything, or do I need to go? Yes, probably. But anyway, but no, it's got to filter into the blood at some point through, like, being brought or being in that environment. So then through that, my dad would bring his kids home to practice from time to time, and like as much as he thought the drums were cool, Davey had just got on and was like, he could always play. Whereas I could hold a beat in the drum kit, that's about it. But yeah, just like, even the art thing was always just something I was able to do just as a kid. Even me, I could be fucking up on every subject, but I could always get an A in art. Like with my eyes closed, man. It was just
enough. You can see it, man. I mean, you and Jones, I mean, fucking hell, some of the stuff you've shown us, even just you doing wee things for people. You showed me a couple of things you did for Ave and stuff, and I was just like, that's just unbelievable. Do you know what I mean? Whereas, you know, for you, it's, you know, and again, that shows you how good you are at it, because you're like, oh, well, you know, I'll just knock something up here, and there you go. Like, but that's awesome, man. It really is.
It's annoying. Like, it's, I always found it strange from when I was a kid till now when somebody said, like, oh, I just can't draw, I couldn't draw a straight line or a ruler. I'm like I don't understand them. I'm like, how can you, like, I don't mean, I'm not taking it literally.
But yeah.
It's like I've drawn a bowl of fruit, it's shapes in front of you. How can you not do that? And like, I just never Cross members, just some people don't have the ability. I'm shit at malls. There you go.
Yeah, but that's the thing, man. It shows you, though, that those things do just come naturally. There's things that you can do are fucking great, and other people can't do, but you can do it no problem. I mean, I was saying to Jones in the last one, I used to go up. That was my thing. You know, I'd just pass the time and chill me out with a drawn like cartoon characters and stuff, stuck them up my wall, blah, blah, blah. And see, now I can't draw for fucking... I've tried, and it's just ridiculous looking. I can't do it anymore.
So I think you definitely fall out of the way, but like I heard Jones said on his episode there that he got away from the art, but when he picked it back up, it was all there again. Certain things, like, you can always draw, but like if you were painting canvases and then you didn't do it for 5 or 6 years, if you went back to start painting canvases, maybe you'd struggle a little bit for a while before you got back into the rhythm of it. Even the same thing where, like, I'm probably jumping ahead here, but like I've pretty much retired from playing bass. Like if I was to, which was meant to be happening just before the lockdown happened, I've been retired playing guitar now for maybe 3-4 years maybe at this stage, and I was basically sold all my shit, all my gear, and went, that's it, I'm done, I'll not play again. And then Anto from Citizens gave me a shout about doing a one-off gig. It was a big gig to be happening in Dublin on the first or second of May of this year. So I was like, can I do it? Because he'd been away so long, and every time you go away, it's hard to come back. I know the human body has muscle memory, and it's like sometimes you sit down and like you put a tune on, you just close your eyes and your hand sometimes plays it for you. You go into a certain riff and it goes, oh yeah, that's how it goes, and you pick it up that way. So getting back though, every time, the longer you leave it, the harder it's going to be. So I was putting things in place to start coming back for that gig, like organized guitars and amps to come back to me, like from Steve from Carson Son was going to lend me a bass, and Bryn, Jones's mate there, was going to lend me a bass. And so I was getting back and the way of it, going, right, okay, I had my set list together, what I had to learn. And then the next thing, lockdown happens, and that was it. So it never happened. So I probably will never be back on stage at this stage.
Is it, do you miss it, man? I mean, is it something that you go, is there every so often you go, I mean, I know this is a totally different thing, but I was watching The Undertaker last raid thing. Going somewhere here, trust me.
Yeah.
And I'm watching him, and he was at WrestleMania the year he wasn't doing it, and you could just see the guy was like, one minute he was like, I'm going to retire in it, and the next minute he's like, oh, maybe I can do one more. And then he's like, oh, I'm happy I'm retired. It's a bit like Edge as well in wrestling. Edge was like, oh, you know, I'm a wee bit, you know, he was retired, and then in his podcast he was going, do you know what, I'm at peace with this now, and then, but there's that wee thing brings you back. Is that what you feel like with the bass and gigging like that, or are you happy? Are you definitely like, I'm at peace with this, I'm happy to be retired now?
Not happy to be retired, man. It's a victim of circumstance, man. And not to be too dramatic about it at all. Like, let me see, the best way to put this, or the fastest way, right? Again, the headset people. Like, the highest or furthest I got in my career was with Senescence. I was with those guys 5 or 6 years. Put a shitload of work into them 5 or 6 years. We busted our humps, man. Got to the point of like supporting Machine Head and Wasp and Soil and American Head Charge and Wednesday 13 and all these bands. And we're like, we stole the show sometimes. Not like, you're not going to steal the show off Machine Head. But some other bands, and like we were the toast of the town of Belfast. We got a distribution deal now while I was in the band, and things was going great, and that's the height of the powers. And then like my brother Davey was drumming with us. Now this guy is a phenomenal drummer, absolutely phenomenal. I've never played with a better drummer. Like, I played with the guys like Stephen Brown and stuff in 7 Days Dead, who is a fantastic drummer. But my brother, he's one of these people, like my dad would say, describing drummers, the fucker's dipped in oil. If you want to know that, like, explain what that means, it means you're fluid.
Yeah.
If you want to see drummers and it looks like they're holding two blocks of wood, and it's like a fucking wind up toy playing the drums sometimes. You see certain drummers, and then there's some guys it looks like they're just flowing, and this guy doesn't. So, anyway, again, I'm rambling. Davey Davey was in the band for years, and that's when we were at the height of our powers. And the next thing, just all of a sudden, he left. And he went to a band called Million Dollar Reload, which was a rock band. And it just, it was like an overnight thing, buys him going. It was like, it was like the air leaving the room, your heart dropping out of your chest, and the brake stopping on the train, all of the above, and the entire, your entire world just comes to a halt. I was just like, we're fucked. And that was basically it, man.
That's so true, though, man. It's like, you know, the drummers, in many ways, if you have a great drummer, if it's a fucking huge loss. I mean, they're the guys that
irreplaceable.
Control the tempo. That, you know, it's fucking, you know, it's you know, there's a lot of fucking, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of jokes about drummers. You've heard them all, I'm sure. Do you know what I mean? But you sit and you go, like, you know, fucking hell, it's like Dave Grohl. You know, Dave Grohl, when he did first Foo Fighters album. Now, this sounds fucking awful, but, and I always forget the guy's name, the guy that was drumming in the Foo Fighters at the start. Can you remember his name? Because my name has fucking left me here. But he like, the story goes that they made the first album, and Dave Grohl, or was it maybe the second album, where Dave Grohl went back and fucking drummed the whole fucking album. Just then took off his drums because it wasn't good enough, and then Dave Grohl drummed. But it shows you have to do it. Do you know, it has to be, you know, it's such a big thing in a band, like, you know.
Yeah, like, even when we were at the height of our powers, like, it was weird because it was like, I don't sound like I'm fucking blowing my own head up here, but it was like almost getting to the point, like, you were kind of become within the scene now, I'm talking, where you're kind of like a local, not a celebrity, I don't want to use that word, but you were getting up there, people knew who you were when you were coming.
Yeah.
So, like, young kids were standing out the back of our gigs, looking at their CDs, saying their t-shirts, saying stuff. Like, I was going, who the fuck am I to be saying somebody's t-shirt or CD? That's weird.
Wow.
It's so strange, man. Like, obviously, you're loving every minute of it. Why wouldn't you be? But anyway,
hell yeah.
Give advice to these kids as best I could. They were saying, like, Kex, what's best advice for putting a band together? And I would always say, get yourself a solid drummer. Get a solid drummer, because if you don't have that, you're fucked before you start. The drummer is, to use an analogy, it's the foundations of your house. You build a house with no foundations. Well, you know what's going to happen. So, like, and then there's another saying my dad has about so-called drummers out there. My dad would say, the fucker owns a kit.
Right. What does that mean now? I want to know what that means. I got the other one, but I don't know what this one means.
You mean you might own one. Doesn't mean you can fucking play it.
Oh, so God bless the Noli by.
What do you think your man on drums though? Oh, the fucker owns the kit. You know, and there's plenty of guys that got around. I'm fucking ragging on people here, but yeah, there is people like McBraw, Davey put the work in, one, and that's how they became as good as the world. I remember him before he could even afford a bag kit. We had bunk beds set in our bedroom, and so as bottom bunk, Davey was top bunk, and he used the bunk beds as a drum kit, as strange as this sounds. So what he would do is he would sit on the windowsill of our bedroom. So you imagine he's sitting on the windowsill. My bottom bed is this kick drum, so he'd use my bed as his kick drum, bum bum with the feet, and he would drum on the mattress of his thing.
Wow.
He would just stick on LP after LP, Guns N' Roses, Aerosmith, Black Crowes, yada yada yada, Skid Row, all these bands, Motley Crue, and he would just sit there, put the album on, side one, side two, and he would drum these albums, drum them until he got as good as he was, and that was playing on a fucking bunk bed. Set.
That's amazing, man. That is fucking amazing story, man. It really is.
And this gig is his first drum kit. It's stuck to water, like, you know.
Yeah. So Jesus,
that's why he's as good as he is, man. And that's why he was such a big loss when the time for us when that loss came on. It was because when he joined Sinistons, it went like we were going like a bomb. Then Davey, his band that he was in a bass, they fell to the west side. So I persuaded him to join Sinners. Now, he's not, he likes metal, but he's not a metal. He didn't want to drum metal, he wanted to drum rock and roll. So I persuaded him, I was like, come on, man, gotta join this band. You'll love it, it's great. Finally persuaded him, and when he joined Sinners, it's as Edger Christian was saying in their show, where he rocket strapped this month.
Yeah.
Rocket strap, rocket to the moon, man. We took off like a fucking rocket bike when that bike came into the band, and then for him to pull out and go to another band, it not only brought the band to a halt, it took all my passion for it away, and because I knew there was no going back.
Yeah,
and you, like, I've been around the scene for years, knowing all the drummers, knowing that there was nobody like. Even in his class, we'd auditioned numerous drummers for Sinners to get back on the road as quick as possible, because we're riding high on the crest of wave here when Davey leaves. Like, we're flying with loads of gigs in, all this, like, with another CD to do, another album. So it's all sitting there, it's all ahead of us with no drummer. And young Chris McMullen, who now drums for Cursed Son and the Bonnevilles, he comes along, he's like 19 at the time, 18, 19. He's a kid, like, he's a fucking, this skinny kid. He's still a skinny kid, but he's older. So at the time he comes in, he's full of piss and vinegar, but he can play the songs. I'm like, well, look at this. So, yeah, Chris comes along, and he kept it, probably, he got us through a tour or two there, man. Got us over the hump, got us to a tour of England and Scotland and Wales that we were supposed to do. God love him, he fucking tried his heart out, man. And I was in bitter mode.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not the same. And fucking fuck this. Like, just basically what it was, I was humpy and grumpy about it and wasn't enjoying it anymore, and was like, this isn't the Sinners that I fucking wanted to be in and all this. You know, just being grouchy and grumpy, man, really.
Yeah.
When we got back to after the gigs and stuff happened and the couple of tours or whatever, and I got back to the writing the next CD and things weren't going as fluid as it was, and that's when I was just like, hey, you know what, this is fucking awful. So it ended up with me going out of the band, being asked to leave.
Not really a grumpy bastard him then, was it?
Yeah, it was just one of them things, man. I'd lost my passion for it, and it was time for me to go. Like, so that was it, man.
I know what you mean. But I know what you mean, man. I mean, it's the same. I mean, I've mentioned several, but in different comedy groups myself, and the first one was on with Chris. After I finished that comedy group, it kind of ended very flat, and now it wasn't going anywhere, and I always said there was one show that we should have finished with, we should have rolled off in the sunset, but you never, fucking hindsight's 2020. But it took me a year, maybe longer, a year and a half, they actually do another gig or anything like that there. And then the same happened with that, because the other group I was in didn't work, because it was my fault for bringing in just too many different people that I didn't know, too many strangers, and we all were like different, and it just doesn't work. There's no chemistry. Lovely people, and they're all dead on. There's just no fucking chemistry. And I remember doing the first gig and going, nah, this is, and I tried to go, that's where we had the story of the crazy guy that sent me the threats and all, and was giving us these weird pictures. If you want to hear about that, go to episode one. So,
Did he put glitter on the pictures?
He did. But splatterings of other people's blood, probably. But anyway, that's a fucking. But I totally get it, man. Once you took me, I didn't think I would actually. To be fair, I didn't think I would do another comedy group. After that, I was like, right, I want to write short films, and that's where start writing different things and all that there. But and that gets me. I mean, dude, first of all, fucking hell, man. What an experience you've had, and literally, as you say, you were being like a fucking treated like a fucking celebrity, man. That's awesome, in a way. As a young guy, that's fucking like, you're fucking must have been like, I am a fucking god, that kind of thing. Whereas,
the highs of the hay, man, were like, it's I still, I'll probably guess. Out of all my Sinners time, like, of a few your highlights that you got. that'll stay with you for the rest of your days. And one of them was that we landed a support slot for Machine Head on their Through the Ashes of Vampires tour in the Mandala Hall in Belfast. And the place is packed to the rafters, sold out, whatever it was. I don't know how the capacity of that place is, 2,000 or something. I don't know what the capacity is. And we get the support slot for that. And we went out and played that gig, and like we've played better gigs, not as in like, oh, we've played the bigger audiences. No, this was the biggest one we've played to. We've done gigs where we were out playing out of our skins. I've never played better live. It was all firing all cylinders. Now we've done well up there with Machine Head, but we have played better gigs. However, there was a point that night that'll stick with me fucking forever and a day, and that was, I have to give it up to the Belfast crowd or the fucking metal scene, rather, that the support they gave us that night was phenomenal, which I'll never forget. So, like, they were chanting, Senna, stuff like that in the crowd. Fuck me. You hear that in the Mandala Hall, it was putting fucking goosebumps up the back of your neck and whatnot, make a hair stand on your neck. But anyway, I took one point in the stage where there's just a drop in the tune where it's just silence and then it kicks back in. On the silence, I just jumped up on the ledge, fucking devil horns up in the air, and the entire crowd done it back to me. And
oh my God.
Was like, if that's not going to put electricity through your fucking veins, holy shit, man. So get that reaction off an entire crowd in one instant. It's like, fuck, does it get any better than this? And then after that gig at night, there was a fucking squad of kids looking pics off you or t-shirt or saying stuff. And like that night, you basically felt like a fucking rock star, man.
That's so awesome, man.
The height of our powers, that's as big as we got. But I got up there, man. I got there. You know, so I can always at least say when I'm laying on my fucking deathbed, "Hey, you done that?" You know, which was pretty cool.
Fucking 100%, mate. That's what I've been talking about the past couple of the episodes. Is, you know, it's not about fucking being a millionaire in a big fucking mansion, man. It's sometimes about those moments. And dude, that's you can't fucking, that's amazing. How did you sleep? Didn't sleep for about 3 days? Because I'd say my adrenaline would have been pumping after that, man. That is awesome.
I think I remember after the gig, me and Morrow, singer, jumping into a shower and fucking, maybe the whole lot of us did. I can't really remember, man. I just went and got fucking hammered and pat ourselves in the back all night.
Isn't it great, though? I mean, we do. I mean, I always, that's something, you know, it's been great for us in the Sixth Sense doing that, man. You know, it's after the show where we're just sitting and we look at each other and going, well, that went fucking all right, didn't it? You know, it's pretty fucking good. You can't, and you want to keep that feeling the whole night, you know what I mean? And then you get home the next day and you're like, oh, fuck, I want to talk more about this, you know? it's fucking great.
It's like a bit in the Tenacious D movie after they've done their first gig and they're just sitting the next day going, we rocked so hard. We rocked so hard. Like, but then there's another class moment I remember as well. Like, this is for a different reason. I love this. Like, if you've heard of the fucking metal rock band Wasp, but you know those guys?
Sure. Oh, I heard of Wasp. Oh, why? Yeah.
Like, legends in the scene. Now, there were cons backstage. We were a bunch of fucking dicks. But anyway, we got to support them two nights in the limelight. So Wasp obviously have a big fucking following and stuff like that. So I just remember this. I think it was the first, I can't remember if it was the first or the second night, so we're on doing our thing, place is packed, we're giving it fucking loads now, with a lot of support at the same time, like a lot of people giving it up for us and stuff, but a lot of old schoolers there, and I remember a lull in one of the tunes, or maybe it was the end of a tune, where the crowd died down, we're waiting to play our next tune or something like that, and whoever shared this up for Foxy, I just heard the shout in the back of the room, player stuff and fuck off.
That's amazing.
And rather than me just go on stage, who the fuck said that? I bust out laughing on stage, man. It's just like, that is brilliant. And I was like, fair play to you, boy.
You have to do that, Cax, man. See, if you had to turn around and start going, who the fuck was that? You would look like a prat. I'd have just burst out laughing too. Like, yeah. It's like, fuck's sake.
Yeah, well, so, yeah, like that. So, as much you can have those big moments of fucking, oh, I'm a rock star, and then somebody is shouting at you, players.
That is the what I would call on any performer. Is you're going to have those nights where you are like, we are fucking, it's like same as us, man. There's nights you do a show and you go, we are Python, we are the fucking next, we are the incarnate and all that shit. And then we'll do a fucking, we'll do a Hardy Bucks, you know, where it's like, get the fuck off the stage, you fucking jerk offs.
You know? Not good, but oh dear. Anyway.
You know, and that's the joy, man. But I mean, that's fucking, that. Even here, that man. I mean, me and you have chatted when we've been drinking some nights in Jones's house, and the after maybe a filming or something like that there. But I've heard bits. But you know, it's like when we're sitting all together, then like one conversation will go into another, and
sure.
See you miss all that. So it's good to fucking. That's awesome, man. That's the hero. That's fucking awesome, dude. And it's, again, it's amazing. It just shows you we've been in a comedy group for what, 4.5 years now, and. There's still bits and pieces we don't know about each other, you know. But, yeah. So when this shit's over, we'll have to get a few beverages in and, you know, and talk shite. You know. Yeah. But, man, the music scene and fucking all that there is fantastic. I want to get you in. I want to start you in the whole get into the comedy scene and get, well, you obviously got in the comedy scene with above us, but the filmmaking and the writing and all that there, you've been doing that for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that start?
Woo, it's a good question, man. Like after after Citizens, I went out of Citizens. They're still going, by the way, folks. You can check them out, Spotify, all that, plug for the sins.
There you go.
Yeah, after that, I went out of the scene and I was basically doing nothing. And, there's a band in Belfast called Interrogate. I thought they were fucking awesome. They were a three-piece. They were badass. And they fell to the wayside. But, the drummer for Interrogate, a guy called Steve Brown. And after Davey went, he was I was on top of my list to get. I was like, get this guy. But he was doing Interrogate. And he says, boys, I'm doing my own thing, but I appreciate it and all this. And I was like, fair enough, man. But he's a badass drummer. And I was down to gig in Belfast, and Stephen and Mark from Interrogate come up to have a chat with me. I think it was Steve. I'm not sure if Mark was there. Anyway, he says, would you be interested in doing something? And at the time, I was sitting half caught, and I was like, nah, man, I'm done. Fuck metal and all this. I was being
I know, I've been there.
And then I sat and thought about it, and I was like, what am I doing? I was like, if you're gonna do this, you're not getting any fucking younger. Who better to go back in with than these guys? So I actually went back over to him. He says, "Man, you know what?" I was like, "Give me a call." So we exchanged numbers. And anyway, this will make this very long story short. We ended up putting a band together called 7 Days Dead. Me, Mark, Steve, and a young fella, Ram McManus, who we auditioned to come into the band, and he came in as singer. And that band was fucking, if I say so myself, dynamite. We're fucking really good, man. And we're setting the scene alight, as it were, making great names for ourselves, getting fucking great support slots. And it was like, I'd never left, man. I was back, I was doing my thing, I was in a different band. It was felt more like, oh, this is my band, because like, came out of the shadow of Citizens and I'm doing my own thing. And
yeah.
Completely full of shit. Like,
I know, but.
But that was it. We were off doing our own thing, and this was a completely different feel and all this, and making a name for myself in this different band. So I felt kind of validated, and then the train screamed a halt, and the air left the room, and my heart sank in my chest, and same thing, that same old feeling came back. Having checks, our singer went to jail.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh shit, yeah. Dude! It's like having a relationship, man. Do you know what I mean? The two of them have been like, just that you've had your heart broken twice.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
You know? You know? Fucking now, hell.
I'll put a wee preemptive on that one, or like a wee asterisk beside this one too, because before the singer went to jail, I think it was probably a month before that happened. Steve, the drummer, one night, Steve had a bad quad bike accident when he was really 18 on the beach, and basically broke his back. So he continued on. Like at the time when the band, he was about 32 at this stage. He constantly he'd been practicing up to stand up out of the kit after every tune or two, and like stretch his knees out and straighten his back and all this. Not a good thing for a drummer to have to sit there all
night.
Like fast metal and stuff like that, and he plays with veracity, this guy. So it was just one night in practice. Like I said, things have been going great with the band, with their CD and all out. We were killing it, and then Stevie just one night stood up out of the kit and practicing and says, "Boys, I can't do this anymore." And we were like, "Oh, what?" And he basically says, "I'm just in agony and constant pins and needles up and down my back and my knees and all this." And what do you say? What the fuck, man?
Bastard was probably doing that for ages, going, "I can't do this," but kept doing it, I would say. And then was like, "I fucking have to say this, you know, fucking hell, man, that's awful."
His passion, this kid's passion, is drumming.
Yeah.
To see it taken away from him like that, man, was heartbreaking. You can't be angry. You just go,
no.
Basically, at that stage, we just went, you know what? We don't, before we make any hasty decisions, let's keep going. We'll keep writing with the rest of the band. Me, Mark, and Ren, keep going. We'll maybe do something acoustically. Try and get Stevie the time off that he deserves until this, maybe rehabs or something. And like I said, about a month later, the singer goes to jail, and that was the final nail in that one. Oh,
the coffin, yeah, Jesus, man, that's. But yeah. So you've had your heart broken, so you decided.
That was it. So it was basically through how I got into the comedy thing was Jones and like Bramall Holland and those guys that started doing like the McKeever and Jones stuff. If you haven't seen that, folks, you can check it out on YouTube and whatnot.
Absolutely.
McKeever and Jones, a ton of these skits, like, and they're funny.
Absolutely.
So it was kind of through that I was kind of pulled in, and I maybe had an idea here or there, and like I'd done like a cameo here and there in bits.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it because it's the performer in me going, well, I'm not on stage anymore, so here's a different stage. After like getting a bit of acting here and there in the McKeever and Jones stuff, or like wee bit parts here and there, started getting the bug for, maybe I could have ideas for silly things, silly stories or things that might have happened to me, and that might be a story. That might be funny. Maybe a comedy skit. And like I was always a fan of comedy and things like The Fast Show and Monty Python's and all like that. So I was like, fuck, these guys, like the McKeever and Jones stuff was kind of skitty, or maybe short stories, if you will.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, what about if he's done this? Or like, so like I said, when I was back in Cinescence, I wasn't a songwriter, but I was an ideas man. I'm not coming to practice with a song going, I want you all to learn this song. That's not me. Basically, it was in Cinescence, Morrow, where he was the majority songwriter, would bring in the tune and then like, but he would go, right, well, here's the new one, and he would show us and we'd be learning along, and he's there, but I'm kind of, we need something here, and that's where I would shine. I'd be like,
sure,
okay, and it's particularly with Davey, if you're a rhythm section, bass and drums, that's where me and him shine together, bass and drums, rhythm section, you work it out, put it on. I was good with ideas, so again, not a songwriter. So when I got to starting to write, I'm not able to write a movie script, but I've got an idea here or there. I might have a skit here or there. So that started the ball rolling with that. I was getting the bug for the acting thing. And then, lo and behold, you guys give me a shout for fucking Hoplophobia.
Yeah, and that's the first time I met you. That was the first time me and you met. And that film was written by me because of a stripper that wanted to strangle me. And that's another... That's another story for another day. I think I probably told it anyway, but you know, Hoplophobia was a, and my writing sounds very similar in yours in many ways. I did the the comedy improv, and then that got something of me going, oh, I could write. I'd love to write something. I'm gonna write. Fuck it, write. And I had no idea how to form a script or write any a proper script. So I just wrote it like a fucking, and next thing it turned into a sketch, turned into a short film, turned into a fucking, I wrote a fit. My first thing ever was like a feature length because I kept writing and writing and writing and writing. It was shite cocks. Like it was awful. But and it's gone, it's dead, it's away. But so when it came to Hoplophobia, I didn't know anybody in the filming. I knew Chris, and Chris was went off to do his because our comedy group had ended, and he went off to do his thing. But I didn't know anybody. I didn't know Bran. I knew Bran from like one DeVar. I went to the first. I was in the first DeVar with Chris. We'd put a film out, and with Bran, so it was Rory. Rory knew Bran for doing something with Aidan Largy, and then I'd said to Rory, "I've got this film, man. I don't know what to do. I'd love to make it." And he read it and was like, fuck man, I know who to give this to. And he gave it to Bran, and Bran, God bless him, took it on. So I didn't know Bill or anybody. That's how I met Bill and you. Because Bill, I met Bill, I went to the DeVar. I was going to the DeVar anyway, and then Bran introduced me to Bill. So I'll blame Bran Mulholland for that. But then, no. So I met Bill and he was really nice and all. I was like, fuck, this guy's lovely. And how wrong was I? And then, but with yourself, it was kind of originally that part. I had said, well, I was going to give Chris Heath the part. I just says, what about Chris Heath? And then Chris couldn't, he was doing different, couldn't do it. And then I was like, well, do you know anybody? And they were like, oh, Cax could do it. Cax. So they sent me a text going, Cax, you read Cax? Who the fuck's Cax? The fuck's this? He's like, is he a model or something named Cax? What the fuck? And of course he was when I seen him. But then, so I just like met you in the middle of a park. Where was it?
Yes,
Botanic.
Onik. Yep.
And that's where it all started, me old son. That was the, or well, no, the first time I was doing a quick scene with Ray Nickel, and then you were doing your running scene with your full fucking bandana. And
Right.
but
Correct.
our first scene together, so it was the second time I met you, was literally me and you laying in a bush.
Yep. The first time, I only knew you from, it was a film the very way, but there was a McKeever and Jones. I think it was maybe the McKeever and Jones Behind the Laughter one, because that's where I met Bill. I was basically on that as a talking head. Went on to slag McKeever and Jones, basically.
Yes, it's a great fuck. It's my favorite one, by the way. My favorite McKeever and Jones.
It was definitely their best one for sure. Put the work in, I think Jones and Bill and whatever got fucking. Just done a great job for it, but get to see Jones' bare naked ass, folks. You just want to say that.
Indeed.
So yeah, that's where I met Bill, and then I think it was at the fair you had a sketch, a film, or you had a film on. It was that one about the, what was it? It was the
The
kitten, or boys
I
and
don't think
girls, or girls and boys.
I don't think I don't know if that was. I'm trying, I've always thought that was on the. Maybe I've lost my timeline totally, but there was. I can't remember what it was anyway. But far away.
I definitely no, because I definitely remember that's the first time I seen you. It was on screen at that. It's that one where you're on. What's it called? Is it
Guy and
Girls and
Dolls.
Boys or
Guy and Dolls.
Guys and Dolls?
Yeah.
That's the first time I actually seen you was on screen in the bar. I was like, all right. I really enjoyed that film that night. I think I might have actually voted for it, man. There you go.
Well, thank
But it
you.
was after that. But it was after that was Bram Mulholland that gave me the shout for Hoplophobia. He was like, oh, Stephen Bort has this thing. And I was like, I didn't know who you were until I got that. I was like, oh, I know what. I did not get the fire. And that was it. I basically arrived down at the at Botanic, got changed into that fucked up outfit I wore. Went over into the park, and there you were playing chess with your mom.
Yeah, and then it was again, I was saying the Jones, I think, was it Jones or possibly it probably was Jones. I was saying that it was that scene where because I didn't want to fuck up, In later years, I mean, we fucking corpse quite a bit when we're doing film and stuff. But and I every part of my body trying not to laugh at your expressions and your face. Do you know what I'm looking at you and you're like, whoa. I probably did corpse. I can't remember, but I remember going out.
I think it was because I remember Brian having to stop a few times in my life, try it again. But the first reaction is I'm getting, I'm loving it. I'm not sitting up upset at people corpse. I'm like, I must be doing something right here.
That's it. Well, because I didn't know any of yous. I felt so nervous doing that. I was like, I didn't know anybody bar Rory and Ray, you know, and also my daughter and all that, and with Kate Conway and all that. But you guys, I didn't know you guys. I didn't know Brian that well. I didn't know, you know, was just like, I was so nervous about that film. It was unbelievable, man. The fuck do these guys think I'm shite? Am I funny enough and all that? You know what it's like, man. You start fucking thinking about, yeah, fucking self-doubt comes in, and then thankfully it all came together. Like, but hey, man, thank fuck you came along.
One time I went down that day, like I knew Brian knew what he was done, what he was capable of, but like you guys are sitting there going, fuck, these guys are all professionals and I'm a fucking jackass here and they're going to see through me and then fuck.
That's what I thought. I was like, who the fuck are these guys? These guys have been doing filming for ages and I don't fucking know. This is like the first time I've ever given a script out to people to do, and you know, I was like, hey, man, I'd only been doing this for a couple of years. I've been doing the comedy group stuff, but coming out see making a short film, and I was going, all these guys know what they're doing, look at this here, and they're all, you know, Bill and some of the stuff Bill was showing me. I remember that there's a part in Hoplophobia where he cut about four different scenes out by just showing a reflection of me walking in off a fucking fruit machine, and I was just like blown away. I was like, that is fucking amazing. This is like, and I was so confident about that film when it was made. I was like, this is gonna be awesome.
Yeah, well, it was a lot of fun to make, man. Football, yeah. After that, I think it definitely gave me the bug. I enjoy this. This is fun. Next scene, I'm getting beat to death by a shovel. That's fantastic.
It's awesome. It's, and guys, again, you know, check it out. Not just for that, but for the it, and yes, I'm plugging my own fucking thing to the route, but it's not what I wrote. It's the people around me. I played that straight. I wanted to play that role straight. I wanted everyone around me to be funny. I wanted to play that role. So I was in. It was the idea of a guy in a world that was like, what the fuck? Yes, he was a florist, but you know, there's you. Rory plays a fucking great part. Yeah. Kathy Brennan Bradley was a, you know, he's a proper bona fide fucking actress. You know, again, no pressure again. You know, that's the first time I ever met Kathy. Was rehearsing that, you know, and going, I'm gonna get found out here.
I remember that Gordon before he was beat to death with a shovel, and I was just sitting. You guys were filming your scene with you and Kathy, and I'm sitting at the side of the garden behind you, just reciting lines over and over in my head. Recite the line, and reading the script, and recite the line. And I'm sitting there going, I'm going to fuck this up, and I'm going to get replaced. And,
that is crazy, fucking. And that's the thing, man. I remember the scene where I'm on the phone. I was so fucking nervous. I'm on the phone and the, you know, in the garden, and then Kathy calls and says, my bread and jam's ready. I'm so nervous, which I love. I was so fucking nervous, man. I just was like, I shouldn't be leading this. I should, you know, I'm only a lead because I wrote this, and that's probably true. But do you know what I mean? I was so to hear that you were nervous, you wouldn't have thought it, man. You just wouldn't have thought it. The part where you get hit by that shovel is, it cracks me up every time I watch it, is that your reaction is so fucking funny. But there's another thing I just learned. Was that your first, are you saying that's your first rule?
Apart from like the first where I popped up in Cameron Jones, yeah, that was it.
Fuck away off, man.
Oh, yeah. Yep, for sure.
I thought you've been doing that for fucking ages. So me and you kind of started out to see, because that was my, other than the guy in Dolls, which, hey, I was putting myself in that because it was my film, because I directed it and fucking wrote it. But that was just holy shit, I'm blown away by that one. I did not know that.
Like my only kind of beggarish thing, if that's not, that is a word, beggarish, folks. One of the devourers before I read and directed a thing called The Pursuit. It's up on YouTube,
Yes.
which is basically Jones is running through a forest and there's Aidan Donaghy is chasing him like this Terminator type character, if you will. He's like this force of nature chasing down the Jones, who is panicking, obviously. So you've got this pursuit through a forest, and then the big reveal at the end is that it was nothing but a big game of chasing, big game of tag.
And you shout out the window, "Hey, mate,
Get the fucking car!"
oh, so
Yeah,
good, man.
I redirected that. I storyboarded that fucking thing. I was that precise about it, and it came out, I have to say, shot for shot, and it came out really good. I was so happy with it,
Oh, it's really.
and the devour and done well. Didn't mind the
It got
fucking
a
thing.
great reaction, man. I remember watching it. I mean, that's the funny thing you say about it. I remember going to the bar and seeing McKeever and Jones, and everyone was roaring with laughter. And I was going, "You bastards, I bet you they're going to win tonight." You know, there's so, and I think there might have been a McKeever and Jones when I did Guy and Dolls.
Yes,
And
there was.
I remember reading through, going, right. And I went, fucking McKeever and Jones are here. I'm not winning tonight. Fucking no chance, you know? So, you know, I And that's genuinely. I was like, "Who the fuck are these cunts? I want to, and there was a bit of me inside going, "I want to meet up with them guys because I'd love to do a bit of work with them." Lo and behold, you know,
There you go.
fucking, you know, we struck gold. Jed's a millionaire with Ed, like, but you know, so Hoplophobia, and then the next thing was obviously then that was Talent Agents then, or did you do anything in between that and Talent Agents?
Talent Agents was the next one, and I just remember that coming up on the audition come up for it, and I was just like, it's the one and only thing I've ever auditioned for, and I got it, thankfully. And I, Jesus Christ, talk about, oh my God, about the nerves. Like, I felt bad there, me and Jones. I think we were both auditioning for Buckle. And
Yeah.
I think I went in for a couple of things. I went in for a Troy Shapiro as well, as far as I remember. And I just remember sitting in that corridor outside, and everybody was really nice. The girls were all running. And I was all very professional. And I just remember,
Yeah.
and y'all guys, when you like, and Bill, I was like, oh, so. I put my at ease a little bit because I knew you guys. I was like, all right, so you know what? Just fuck it, do your hang and never mind. And just we'll see what happens. And I remember doing the Troy Shapiro when I tried to play him as Vince McMahon and it didn't work. So I was like, oh boy. I was like, so I started feeling the fucking my face getting all red. And I was like, I'm fucking this up. I'm fucking this up. And then I done the buckle thing and it just felt more natural.
Dude, it was for me. It was like, because it was like, to be honest with you, Buckle was what my say was going to be the fucking hell the rest of him. He was the guy who was supposed to work with me. You know, you know, the way I've always looked at Buckle and Simon Hitt was it's Laurel and Hardy. You know, where Simon is Oliver Hardy. He thinks he's smarter than. You know, he thinks he's smarter than Buckle, but he's not. Buckle's actually smarter than him. Buckle might come across as the idiot, but Simon's the bigger idiot. And that's the way I wanted it to be. I've said this before. You and Jones, you originally, the first guy we thought of playing Buckle was actually Michael Smith, who ended up being Troy Shapiro. And the thing about that is, you know, we had a different guy directing at the time, and to be fair, do you know what? And again, I'll say, the professionalism you talk about, that was down to him and a lot of the people he got from Queens that came in and did that for us, and I'm eternally grateful to them. But I
Absolutely.
know who I want to have in a comedy, and the person he wanted to have was Bucko. I was like, no, it's Cax. I had made my mind up straight. I was like, I kind of even made my mind up before he got in, man. It was like the closer I got to it, I was going because I've worked with you, and I was going, "It's I think Cax will be," and I said the rise, I think Cax will be a better Bucko than Michael Smith, and that's no offense to Michael. It's just I can tell by your expressions and stuff. And as I said at the intro, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, man. You are the most naturally funny guy I've ever fucking met. Bar none, man. And that was me like going, I need to work with this guy. I felt really lucky because Rory was getting a kind of more of a serious sidekick and blah blah blah. There was more of a drama with her, whereas I was like, I'm just gonna have fun with this guy. This I need to have the person that I'm gonna have as my sidekick. I'm gonna have fun with. So that was a no-brainer. So that was my process, and was just like. And anyone else came in, it was like, I was like, I don't go fuck what these two, you're not going to beat this guy. And you got it. And then Jones, yeah. I was like, I need to have Jones in this. And it was killing me. So it was like Jones, well, sorry, that's a lie. That's a barefaced lie, Stephen. It was Jones kind of came in as well. And then Jones kind of fucking was like, I was like, oh, fuck, they were both really good as Bucko. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but I kept going for you, and then I was talking to Bill on the phone going, I don't fucking know what, I need to have Jones in, because his audition was brilliant, and that's why we made a character up for him, we made Kenny Ryu up for him, we were like, you know, I know what we're going to do here, and I was like, I'm going to rewrite this scene, and I'm like, don't get around to many words, but my God, they were good words when he did them, you know, and Jones made that into that character.
Mm.
But yourself with Bucko, man, I mean, that, you know, I remember the night before, this is kind of where the Sixth Sense started to, started to form, you know, it's kind of the beginnings, I think, because mm-hmm. the night before, I think you've said yourself before, the night before, you were kind of nervous the night before we started filming. And we met you in Belfast, so me and Bill, we couldn't find anywhere to have a fucking coffee, if I remember rightly. There's not a coffee house to be open in Belfast that night. And we met you, and it was like, because you were you working somewhere different then?
I believe it was, I can't remember where, but I remember
bunking off for the week.
maybe I was there, maybe I was coming from Dublin or something, I can't remember, man, but yeah, I just remember coming to meet you guys. Or no, else it was. I was actually working in Dublin. I took the days off to come up to film. Because it was like, maybe I was needed for 2 days, 3 days. I can't remember what it was. And I took the days off work to come up to do it. But the night before, I was just going like, oh, Jesus Christ. The nerves. I was like, because it was like, there was an itinerary and all. And it was like,
yeah.
And stop. I was like, what am I doing here? I'm going to get caught out. And
yeah. Yeah, I was
just being self-doubt and all, and but it's one of the things even to today, mom, where I go to perform, I'm a fucking bag of nerves until bang,
yeah,
showtime, and then I switch on and it's like okay, and everything disappears, and I'm ready to rock and roll, and it just goes away. And I right up until you guys, we went into Sid's house to shoot that fucking scene of us going in there, and. Action, and I went straight into character. I was there,
and that was it, man. I mean, that, you know, we talked the night before, and then and we were walking back to Jones's house, and I had no idea where Jones. I just left you off. I think fucking in the middle of Dublin Road. I'd like, see you later. I was parked around the corner.
Yeah,
and I was going, and I started talking. I was going, dude, I would love to do a comedy group. I'd love to do a comedy group, and I was like, and I could see. I think you've already said you were going to irate Stevie. You're like, yeah, man, that'd be great. That'd be great. You're like, fuck me.
I actually have to tell the folks that's listening about that. Yeah, so Stevie had talked about like putting this live comedy act together, this comedy troupe thing, and I was just sitting there going like, I ain't doing this shit on stage. Fuck that. Like, fuck. It's like, it's okay if somebody give me a script and I'll do it on camera and then I get to go home. Ain't that stopping fucking making jokes in front of people? Like, fuck that.
You walked away going, I like fuck, and I'm walking away going, I think I got him.
It's in the bag.
And I was going, right, that's because it was you and Jones, and it was Bill and Ed. I had said to Bill about it. I was like, Bill, right, get in a comedy group, and Bill says, I will. And I said, you fucking Jenk Jones and Tax, we get them. And then we were talking about, we'd mention a few other names and blah, blah, blah. But then eventually it just ended up us four. But anyway, I'm jumping ahead there. But to me, you know, that's where we started. We did Talent Agents, which was fucking so much fun. And man, Again, that's solidified me going, yeah, I want to do comedy with this guy, because it was so much fun. The other thing was, there's a competitive streak in me, and I was watching you going, that bastard's fucking funny, right? I need to be funnier. And I couldn't do it. But then there was bits like you were doing like little things, like you were eating the biscuits and stuffing the biscuits into your mouth. And everyone was laughing at you, and I was going, bastards, you're laughing at him. Why aren't you laughing at me? You know? And they were laughing at me, but I just weren't. I was like, I'm fucking, but right, I'm fucking. And it definitely lifted my levels. I was like, right, I have to step my game. Because I watched you doing just little subtle things, and I was like, I need to step up. Yeah, I really need to step up here. So that's a good thing, man. You know, that to me, that's like,
I think we all raise each other's games, man, because it's like I said there, you like, I'm every day you're learning this, doing this fucking craft, man. So I'm always watching what everybody's doing, going like, oh right, that's interesting, and like always learning on the job, man. And even that day, like that, me stuffing biscuits in my mouth was something I thought about rather than sitting with my hands on my knees. I was like, well, I have to be doing something, I guess. So that's a load of biscuit in my mouth, like I'm a hungry fucking prick, and it worked.
I love it, because I'm sitting, look, it reminded me of someone bringing it, like, it was,
yeah, like a big, you
know, it was like bringing a child to you, and you're like, fucking, and I'm giving you the mummy look, you know, that mummy look, you fucking behave yourself, you know, fucking stop taking the biscuits, you know.
I was sitting there looking at you, like, what?
And it's what since, you know, since kids.
After we cutting that though, man, I had to spit them biscuits out. So I was fucking locking my head up. I was like, what am I doing?
And the most famous scene of talent agents in my eyes, anyway, the scene that I could not wait to see, and it did not disappoint, was you in the bath with, yeah. We'll say Sid was a lady. Sid is a lady. You in the bath was said, and I remember writing that and laughing my balls off at the thought of it when I was writing it, going, that is going to be, if we can do this scene, it has to be done no matter what we do. And I remember going the bath, and I was going, I hope the fit can fit in the bath, the two of them. And oh Jesus. And then someone came up with the idea of blowing bubbles into the bath, you know, like a fucking Roman. I can't remember who ever did that. Fucking genius. It might have been Taylor, I don't know. But it was a brilliant idea of just, let's get the what's it, John Paul van der Velde? It was us. He was a butler. He's blowing the bubbles into the bath, man. And
listen, and honest, then it was dreading that scene coming up. I knew it was coming in the script. I was like, oh fuck. And obviously, Matt said no. She was a lovely lady. And she's in this house thing going, so there's her husband standing over there. I ain't going to jump in the bath of her. After in front of all the crew, I was like, this is brilliant. This is great. So, yeah. She's going, what are you doing, man? But I was like, you know what? If you don't do this, never do this. Like, what's the point in going on, Martin, if you're not willing to do this? So I was like, you know what? Just fucking do it. And I'm glad I did, and it turned out fucking great. It was
really good, man. It was just, I remember I couldn't look at you. I said, they were, because I could see people sniggering and laughing because you were in the bath, and I have to open the door and look at you. And I'm trying my best not to fucking burst out. I am fighting every fucking muscle in my face not to burst out laughing, because I wanted to get it like, fuck off, you know? And it's the fucking most surreal thing you've ever seen. And you know what, folks? If you're listening at home going, I'd love to see that. I'm sorry, you can't. Maybe someday you can, but at the moment, you can't. So, but,
there was even another scene I just want to bring up, is that one where I meant to be bringing your lift, so I rave in this fucking I'll beat up van, and you're like, what the fuck is this? So I go to pick you up, the van's broke down, and you were supposed to be hitting me with, you had flowers in your hand, so I just said, yeah, lay it in, man, lay it in. And you beat the shit out of me with a bouquet of flowers.
My kids actually went, because they've never really seen me lose my shit, you know. I'm quite laid back, and they had never seen me screaming and shouting like that. And they were like, that kind of frightened me. I've never seen you go on full fucking, even my uncle, because it was my uncle's van.
That's right. Yeah.
And my uncle was a bit like, I think I'm going to go backwards a second. He gave the same reaction that you told me your dad gave when you got beat with that shovel in Hoplophobia. It's like, Jesus. I didn't bother the fuck any of those flowers. It was, and then the other scene of you as well, and it's the one with you and Rory, as you visit them in hospital. It's fucking, it's just, honestly, man, I do think in many ways you stole the fucking show, and well, I just, it made me laugh so much. Just anytime that Bucko character comes in, and the faces you make and stuff like that there, and I just, it got me every time. And see writing other episodes of that, honestly, dude, there's episodes that I've written with you, and it's just there's an episode, and I'll put it out here to you, is episode 2, and I just had this fucking idea, and I fucking, you know when you write something and you just fucking, you can visualize it, and I just start fucking shaking with laughter, and maybe people listen to this going, well, it wasn't really that funny, but I found it hilarious. And basically, it's, I get given a task, and I come into the canteen, and you're sitting there with a fucking cream bun. And every time you're trying to eat the cream bun, I stop you from eating the cream bun. And you're getting more frustrated. So then again, you pick it up and you go to eat it, and then you put it down again. And at the end, I say something that, it was an outrage to me. And I lift the bun and start eating the bun, and you go, "You bastard!" And I go, "A fucking notebook? Oh, he's a fucking bastard." With my mouth full, you know. That fucking had me, man. That slayed me. Because I can imagine the way you would have played that. I just, you know.
I got the script for episode 2, I think. And read through it, and I was like, oh, this is going to be fucking awesome. Obviously, we'll never get around to doing an episode 2, but that would have been killer, man. As the ideas already were planned to me. Already, I could do this. And I don't know, maybe like the episode with Rory we were talking about, maybe someday, you never know, man. Although I did like that idea of doing the documentary thing you were talking about. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's something that I have started writing it. So, you know, as a man, it might not, but it you know, we'll see what happens. But there's a scene where I have Bucko sleeps in the cupboard, you know, and it's the two. I'll throw out a couple on and see what you think. Was in episode 3, my character and Rory's character get sent off to be with a scout camp, but they send you and Rory's PA off to a luxury hotel. But you have to share it. There's only one room left, so you have to share it together. And the dilemma is you end up sleeping in the fucking cupboard. And she's like, "Do you really, you sleep?" Because fuck, I says, my sister, she was fucking, she was spoiled. So she was, she used to sleep in the bath, you know, and it was all this. And then she's like, and then it's like her jealous boyfriend turns up the door and you're in the cupboard sleeping. And she's going, trying to make an excuse. Next thing you just hear the snoring from the door. And then he's like, "Who the fuck's that?" She's like, and then he opens the door and I just had your picture of you just falling out the fucking door. Joe, like fucking straight as a board. Oh, fuck.
He's been starting up like.
Yeah.
That's great, man.
Oh, just the door opening, you just flattened down. And honestly, man, yeah,
you delayed there, man?
I've just delayed. Hang on to, do you want, folks? I'm going to say this in the middle of the podcast. We had a bit of a delay here, but we're going to continue on. So if you've missed anything, basically, I think we just missed out, man, where we were saying about the buckle falling out of the wardrobe door. And then the next one I had was in episode four, is at the very end, my character was had like a, do you know, like, what do you call it, Bonnie Tyler type character. And we're trying to revive her career.
Yes.
Yes, and the idea was that it just had it that we found out we won, but we basically take her to a gay bar, she turns into be a gay icon, and we reignite her career, obviously by accident. But another scene is where we wake up in the bed, and I wake up in bed beside her, and I look at her, and I'm like, holy fuck, I've been in bed with this character, Roxy. And next thing I look down, and there's two fucking feet stick up beside me. I'm like, what the fuck? And there's Ed Buckle in the bed with us too. We all just start fucking screaming, you know? You know, so there's so much. There was so much. And that's the thing, man. And what I'm getting at, I'm sorry for going on a long fucking way around her, but that's what you brought to that character, man. It was like, it made it easier to write things. It was like, fuck, this is easy. I see you now. And I can do this. This is fucking brilliant. And it made it so easy to write, you know?
Sure.
And that kind of gets us on to, we finally got you into that comedy group, Cax.
You did.
We kind of tricked you by saying, we'll just film stuff. We'll not do any live stage stuff.
Yes, you did.
And we kind of stumbled upon the live stuff, to be fair. Yes. We'd done the Belfast Comedy Festival, and they said this, oh, he's not doing anything live, so we had to bring something up live, and then we had to break it to you because you weren't at that meeting.
Yes, I remember that. And it's just, we're like, so we're supposed to do a live show Belfast Comedy Festival, and I think it was like, a week to get prepared or something, wasn't it? On the fair went through me, man. Yep. It's like, what, why, what are we doing? What the fuck is this? Why have we to do this? Jesus Christ, man, yeah. But, like, at the same time, I was sitting going, right, all my worst fears are coming through, but it's Belfast Comedy Festival, we're a comedy group, and if we're not doing this, what the fuck are we doing this comedy group for? That was the spurring on for me, going, right, well, if we're not doing this, then what's the point in doing it?
So, yeah.
Fucker, just have to bite the bullet and do this. And thankfully, it fucking worked out pretty good. Man.
Well, it shows you, you know, you go from getting people asking for your autograph, going on to a stage, Cax, to sitting beside a toilet where people were queued up, because that's the only place we could sit while our videos are being shown. Before we go out on stage, we had to sit beside the toilet, and people, thank fucking, could you imagine how awkward that would have been if it had been shit? You know? People are going, that's very good and all that there. I could imagine the other side of me is going, could you imagine how funny and awkward that would be if people just stand there and they wouldn't want to look at us, you know,
the silence.
Yeah, we're like, oh.
Just stand awkward.
Would you like a crisp?
Oh, man, it would have been awful. Yes, we played for the Sunflower, the Belfast Comedy Festival. It was basically it was just like a room. It's this fucking room. It was like a shop, like an open floor.
Gallery. It was a gallery.
Yeah, so it was just basically this square room. We stood at the front with the projector was behind us for the sketches, and we just done our hang in front of, like, what was it, 50 people though?
Yeah, it was a sellout, my friend, and it got a great reaction, man. I remember sitting there going, oh, shit, this. But the reaction, we got a great reaction coming out on the stage at the start. Well, on the say stage, it wasn't a stage, but, you know, people were laughing. It was you and Bill were on the stage, and I came out in my fucking shorts and T-shirt eating a bowl of Watsits, and Jones is in the audience, you know, and it was literally a very different from what we've been doing recently, where we've done more sort of live sketches on stage. But it was a really enjoyable show. It was us just acting the goofball on the stage, and then our videos did all the talking, like, but
yeah, it was one of them things there. We were working out stuff on the day before people arrived in there. Probably right until arriving. We were working out, right, we'll do this, make sure you do this. And funny is, that crowd were ready for it, and they were laughing from the first to the last of that night. And talk about putting you at ease, man. Like, that first one is, like I've said to you before, man, many years of doing metal, I could play metal to fucking 2 people, to 20,000 people, and it wouldn't bother me. It wouldn't fucking... the only way to break a sweat is by moving around the stage like I do. Comedy.
Yeah.
Different animal altogether, because you're sitting there, you're not going out there to play a tune that people may or may like. If my string breaks my bass, I'm able to cover it because there's all guys in the band to play on while they fucking restring. Comedy, you're going to fire right here, it's going to go up in the air, it's either going to fucking fly or it's going to dance us, and there's nothing that you can do about it. And that really is sad. And that's why even right up until today, I'm terrified of going out on stage with stuff, because I know we've been doing it long enough for a go. Obviously, we can make people laugh. We've been doing it long enough. People laugh at our shows. Got the ability there, man. But it still frightens the fuck out of me going on stage. I'm just going, what if we down our asses? But then, that's part of it.
It is. That's what I was about to say. It's part of the pull to do it. I think it's the fear, but then the reward afterwards. The reward's fantastic.
Exactly. It's great. You know? For the effort, man. The other things that I listen to, like if I'm listening to like Bill Burr on his podcast, he always talks about the many times like he had to fucking eat his balls on stage when he was an up and coming comic. Even today, that bike
around
to us like fucking on a set last night, it was terrible. I hit my balls on stage. Fuck it, I'll be better for the next one. And I'm going, this is a professional guy who still now and again he fucks up, but if you got to try. You have to try, man.
Yeah. And that's it. I mean, listen, man, your missus has already told me about you famously driving fucking nearly through red lights and everything because you get that nervous. And again, it's back to, you wouldn't know it when you're on stage. I mean, I go back to we used to do an Edelweiss skit where it was you were going to sing the song and every time us bastards, you know, ruined that on you. But you were sitting on the stage chatting to the audience and it was just like, I swear to God, man, it was that you thought you'd been doing that for years. You know what I mean? It was so natural you doing that, you know, and that's, again, when we were looking for the people to be in the comedy group, it was like, you can just tell if someone's naturally funny, they're fucking funny. You have naturally funny bones, man. It's just a funny guy. I mean, even just, you know, it's like when we sit down, when we meet up at Jones's house or whatever, like the fucking crack's flying. Like, you know, that's why we do it. You know, it's amazing. Do you know what I mean? So there's magic happening.
I do tell people about like what happens when it's the four of us in the writer's room. I can't remember any time we've walked away from the writer's room with nothing. There's always something. There's always something. There's always somebody that sparks an idea, which sparks fucking 60 ideas. But it's always early, and it's always, we're always making each other laugh. And that's nothing but fucking encouraging.
That's what keeps me going, man. And we'll wrap up soon because I kind of just want to get to the point where we are today as, and we're in the Sixth Sense and blah, blah, blah. But I wanted to get, but you know, that's the thing keeps me going. And it's kind of joked about with Jones. Every so often I go, fucking the hell of it. I can't be arseless anymore. It's not fucking worth it and blah, blah, blah. And it's just me being a fucking dick. But anyway, and you know, there's time, but that's the thing that keeping me going. It's like when we meet up, and it's been fucking really difficult, and we've kind of kept our spirits up by meeting on video chat and doing the podcast and stuff like that there, but it's not even the comedy, it's the group.
Yep,
the group keeps me going. I love being in the group as more as much as I love doing the comedy. I love being in the group. It's maybe, you know, it's the group up in more than the length of time I've been in the Sixth Sense has been more than the other groups have been in combined.
Yeah.
And you know what I will say is and we've been saying this the past couple of weeks, I can't wait to get going again. I cannot wait to get going again. So,
and the material has still been forthcoming. Like we're still writing. We haven't been sitting on our asses, and
yeah,
I know for a fact it's back to when you're meeting up in person and the writer's room comes back, everything's going to hit the ground running, and it's trending towards maybe like the next live show, which is going to be something that we've ever done before. Plus, with other irons in the fire there, as it were, with different projects looking to do. But the lockdown, obviously, it's a fact that everybody, but what else can you do? In the lockdown, we can't meet up in Fulham and stuff. It's getting closer, but the only best thing we could do was live podcasts or do podcasts and get your throw sketches up that people weren't able to see before. And
yeah,
it's just content, and you have to do that. Forget about you. And it's such a thing nowadays with social media, people are very up to forget you and go, ah, fuck them guys, are so last week. You know, if you don't keep, if you don't keep it current and keep them up, then they're going to forget about you.
That's it, and we haven't gone away, you know. But no, but you know, we're still keeping ourselves out there. But it's a little, I don't want to say unsatisfying to do. We did the one the other week, the first dates, and yeah, it was great showing it. But dude, I was sitting at home going, this is all well and good, but I want to be out performing.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know if the rest of you felt like that, but I was kind of like. Should have been saying that something, but I kind of felt a wee bit underwhelmed in many ways because it was like, this isn't the same thing. It's not the same for me. I don't want to do this. I can't hear people laughing. Am I getting a reaction to this? Yes, you're getting little emojis that pop up every so often, but you know, and I've got good feedback from people and read the comments and stuff, but it's still not the same as a live, live feedback, if you know what I mean. So
Those nights we've done the Mac and the Black Box and things like that to a decent fucking size house. Oh my God, you better be on your game. And they'll let you know where you're funny or not. That's sure. Like people are, and then like, yes, you'll have your friends and family coming to your gigs, but that hasn't been really the case for a lot of our shows. Obviously, it's a lot of your peers and people you know, but. There's been a lot of strangers who've came over the salesman and are just wandering off the street like in that one of the last ones in the back. Loads of people in that audience I've never fucking laid eyes on before on the end.
Yeah.
So they're calling up to shake your hand and going, you're awesome, signing autographs, signing fucking napkins and stuff like that. I was like, this is bizarre. People were doing
great.
Using that's really encouraging to get stuff like that. Obviously, man, there's the flip side of that. Where you do shows like the where we supported the Hardy Bucks and went down like a fucking fart in a spacesuit, or the Lurgan show where it was a stoner bar and nobody gave a fuck. You're going to get those, but at the same thing, you have to give yourself praise as well. Where like a Black Box or a Mac, people came for us. There wasn't any other show on that night, they came for us and enjoyed the show.
That's it, man. And I say, but you say about the Lurgan show, the one thing about that Lurgan show, and I'll take us to fucking grave, man, is we still put a great performance. I remember walking away going, right, okay, there was laughs. Would have got laughs, but it just was, it was a very strange room. But I came away going, but we were really good. I actually, you know when you've done a good gig, and you know when you've done a shit gig, and sometimes you do a shit gig and go, all right, we were shit. But that night was like, I felt kind of good. It was a very strange feeling, you know, because I went away going, that audience was very strange because people were milling in and out of the room as well. Doesn't help. But I felt what we were doing was like, fucking hell, every time we perform, we're getting better and better. So that's kind of why I can't wait to get back as well, because I want to get back into the groove again, because we were getting ourselves into a bit of a groove. So fuck you, coronavirus. And but listen, man, I'm going to wrap it up around there. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, man. It's been an absolute pleasure. Apologies if there's been any wee cuts or anything in this. Just fucking, this is the nature of doing a podcast over Skype, as you've probably heard in the past couple of podcast. But dude, thank you so much for being on it. I'm sure we'll be doing the Sixth Sense one on Sunday, recording anyway. But this will be out on Sunday. It'll be Father's Day, so us being old dads now, We'll say happy Father's Day to anyone listening, and I shall see you next week. You've got the tagline now. So my name's Stephen Barrett.
Actually, just before you do this, just want to ask you something. Do you want me to sing the show off? I instead of having to select the tune or something, I can sing my way off the show. I'll just start right now. I'll just jump ahead of you. Hey, did you happen to see?
Do you know what? I actually thought you were going to sing fucking Edelweiss. It's not happening, Cassidy. It's not happening. Fucking stop that shit now.
Have my day in the sun, Stephen Barrett.
Aye! You ruined my tagline!
Here's the tagline, you fuck.
It's work. I think it's great.
It's awesome.
I've been Stephen Barrett. You've been...
I forgot my name for a second there.
You're a wanker. You're a wanker.
One more time. Fucking...
You're a fucking piece of shit. You've ruined it. It doesn't matter. We've been talking bollocks.
Hey.
Catch you later, folks.
Bright, you look happy to meet me. Blossom of snow, may you bloom and grow, bloom and grow forever. Edelweiss, Edelweiss, bless my homeland forever. Edelweiss, every morning you greet me, small and white, clean and bright. You look happy to meet me. Blossom of snow, may you bloom and grow, bloom and grow forever. Edelweiss, Edelweiss, bless my home.